All right, we ready to go? Wow, feels like I'm in a youth group. Nobody says anything. Are we ready to go? Hey, I'm Mark, and I've had the privilege of working with children, youth, and young adults for quite a while. So that's cool, that's easy, that's me. What about you? So let me think for a minute. Who's serving in a part-time role with junior or senior high? Okay. Who's serving in a full-time role with junior or senior high? Okay. Who's getting paid the big bucks and they have a role with junior or senior high? All right. What church are you guys at? You're getting paid big bucks. All right. Okay. I'm moving over there. Okay. Who's getting paid a stipend and they have a role with junior high and senior high? All right, the honest people. How many feel like they're called to serve Jesus in his church in some type of role with youth? Okay, we're getting there. Now, everybody, stand up, please. This is awesome. So, who's been serving Christ in his church and youth for less than a year? Okay, so you guys sit down. Good job. So, who's been serving Christ in his church for 1 to 2 years? Okay, sit down. Good job. Okay, who's been serving Christ in his church and youth for 2 to 4 years? No one? No one's in the category? Okay. What about 4 to 6? Okay. Hands up. Good. You guys can have a seat. So that means that everybody left standing has been doing this for over 6 years, right? 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Uh-oh, we got some holders of honor here. 12.
I haven't done it. I'm just
going to
help my sister.
Oh. Okay. So how long have you guys been in? 14? All right. Okay. So it's Ray, right? So Ray, you should be coming up here and doing this, okay? Longevity. I want to know how come you don't have gray hair. But anyway, that's another story. Okay, so in pairs, what I'd like you to do, and if you don't have a pair, it's okay, just like classic youth group, you can be in threes. I want you to turn to the person beside you and quickly introduce yourself, and then I'd like you to pray for that person that they can actually receive what God wants to say to them through this time, and that they would be open to hear his voice, and that this time will be profitable for his kingdom, okay? All right, you do that, and when it kind of quiets down, then we'll jump right in. Lord God, our Heavenly Father, we come to you in Jesus' name, and I thank you for this esteemed group of hardcore youth workers here who want to know what it means to serve you in your kingdom and these youth that we've been called to. I just pray that this time would be profitable, and I pray, Lord, that you would use this to further your kingdom. And I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. So you've done the work, right? I don't know if many of you or any of you follow with some of the Billy Graham ministry, but I really feel like I'm in youth group. Sorry. Spilled coffee, bags going up. One of the biggest lessons I've learned from them is that prayer is the battle. And I'll add that to one of the points if we want. Okay, everybody needs to have one of these sheets right here. And if you don't have one, grab one beside it. So you guys probably recognize this really clearly. And for those who are listening online, it's a calendar I'm holding up. And it's just a week calendar. And all I want you to do is to look in reverse. So today is Saturday. So you start last Saturday, or you start anywhere you want. And then just be general if you want to do chunks of times, like morning, afternoon, evening, and you fill it in. So this is all you're going to do is record on that calendar what you did. So I don't care what you ate for breakfast, but, you know, whatever. Got up, prayed for 4 hours. Come on, dude over here, Tyndale, he's on the wall over there, right? He's in prison translating the Bible. Maybe you translated the Bible. Like, maybe you prepared your youth lesson. Okay? So just fill that in for the week. And, like, literally, just quick. Boom, boom, boom. Don't think too hard. You guys okay? You got that? Everybody's good? Great. I'm just going to put a little bit of Hillsong back on when you do that, and then we'll get going. We're just after the ad, though. I love it that some of you have to think. This is good. Don't know what you did last week. Okay, we're just about there. I want you to try to be as accurate as you can. Can't remember? Are you married? Pardon? Are you married?
No.
Oh, I was going to say, ask your wife. She'll know. So this will be most effective is kind of as complete as you can make it. Okay, we'll quiet these boys down again. Very soft, mellow voice. Good job. So, has anyone done this exercise before? Has anyone done this with their youth? You feel in a reverse calendar, Ray? You've done this, yeah? So, how have you used it? Okay. Buddy, come on, you should be team teaching this with me. So, what does your calendar look like? What are the big chunks in there? Okay, besides sleeping, sorry, what was it? School? What are some other ones?
Work.
What else? Gym? All right. Did somebody say stress? No.
Preparation?
I love that. Okay. Meeting. Oh, death by meeting, yes. Crying? Sure. Commuting. Oh, yes. We just moved a year ago. My wife drives back and forth to Cambridge, and supposedly she's going against traffic. There is no against traffic anymore. Anything else? So, Ray, I don't know if you've used this one. Have you seen the one where the professor does this for his class, and he comes in, and I'm sorry, I should have been really, really well prepared, but he brings in the big mayonnaise pickle jar or whatever it is, or a beaker, and he has it full. Have you guys seen this one? Yeah? So he has it full of these rocks, right? And the student, and he goes, hey, you know, this is the jar, you know, it's full, right? And they go, yeah, it's full, you know, just easy mark, right? Because, and then he comes along, and then he pours in, and it's like a bunch of smaller rocks, right? And it starts to fill in, and then he goes, is it full? And they go, like, okay, why are you asking me? Sure, yeah, it's full. And then, of course, he comes in, and he puts some of the crushed stone that are even smaller and starts filling up the spaces, you know, is it full? And then they're thinking he's tricking them, and he goes, yes. And then in the very end, they put in sand, and so literally everything's all full up. He goes, yeah, yeah, it's full now. And then what does he do? He brings in the pitcher of water, and he fills it up, and it pours in, and then the whole thing is full. And then it's like, yeah, yeah, it's full. And of course, the students are like, okay. And he says, so what's the point? And then it's like, oh, you know, things aren't as they appear, or, you know, always listen to your professor, or I don't know. And he goes, no, it's really simple. You got to put the big rocks in first. So what are the big rocks on your calendar? So when you look on your calendar, if it's commuting, that's what your life is. It's a commuter life. I'm being very serious, actually, now. So if it's working, then, you know, of course, what are you spending your time at? What are you working at? So what I want to talk about is what are those big rocks? And if we talk about longevity in youth ministry or thriving in youth ministry and not just surviving, the really hard question would be, are your big rocks based on thriving activities? And listen carefully, or are they based on activities just to survive? And if you've never thought about that before, I've been challenged with that at every stage of my life. Am I just doing the next thing so that I'll survive, or am I actually putting the things in for the longevity? So what, you know, the obvious ones, right? I got married, and if I don't pour into my relationship with my wife, then we survive together, and you've heard all the stats and all the pictures. I'd be just kind of like two people living together in a house, right? So they're surviving. Same with when you have kids. It's like you survive badminton practice, and then skating lessons, and then piano lessons, and help with the homework, and, you know, you just survive the thing instead of what are the pieces that I'm putting in so that we're thriving as a family. Praying with your kids at bedtime and all those kind of things. So if you're a youth worker, if you are a youth worker, what are some things, what are the big rocks that we're putting in? I've chose seven because seven is what? It's the number of completion, and after that, there's no more, right? Okay, you have to learn. My jokes aren't funny, but you have to laugh at them, okay? I know that. I'm going to steal, this is being recorded. So Dave, if you're hearing this, I'm stealing your story. So, Dave Overholt, a lot of you guys maybe know him, great guy, and one of the stories that he tells is one of my favorite stories, is about a friend of his, and it's really awesome because he just talks about that this friend just exuded, you know, Jesus, right? And it was just really, really powerful. And I'll make this really short, it won't be quite as effective, but to get us to the point is that wherever this guy was, it kind of flowed out of him. So, all this connecting point to come up, real estate, in real estate and stuff like this. So what happened is that this dude who knew God so well, his friend was, showing a house in real estate. And I don't know, has anybody bought and sold houses? All right, everybody's poor. Okay, good. No, say, you're going to afford $1 million house. They walk in the door. This dude is showing the open house, and they walk in, and it was like one of those really weird moments. And why I asked if you've done that, because when we moved to Ottawa, I think we saw 30 houses, and the real estate person actually became our friend. And they're sitting there, and the person literally sits down on the couch, And they're going just like, oh, I don't know about buying a house. It's just like, I'm so confused. And the person turned to the real estate agent and said, do you know God? Like, this is for real. This is for real. And the person was like, well, no, like, not really. And like, instantly, right? This friend, I'm not using their name on purpose, it was like, he knows God. I'll connect you with him. And maybe, I'm sorry, I'm losing the powerfulness of it, but it was so powerful because it was just like, he knew instantly in his head that this person knew God. So when we talk about this whole, I guess, principle of what are the big rocks, what we're putting in, I think one of the biggest stumbling blocks that we can have is that we think that we can somehow program or figure out how to do this, and we literally, we have God, but we don't necessarily know Him. Seeing the power of Him work in people's lives. Literally feel His presence. Have His Word, soak through us and just be realizing that we're loved, or realizing that He has things in control, and it's so, so amazing. One of the things I do so many times throughout the youth, and it seems like almost every week it comes up as they do this really stupid thing, and I'm getting older so it's harder to do, but I jump across this line back and forth. Like, there's only one line, there's only one line, there's only one division in everything. And the kid's like, okay, Pastor Mark, we know that. And I said, what is it? Do you know what it is? The Creator and the created. And you're thinking, like, that's whoopee-doo, right? Who cares? But when you know God, you know how big a deal that it was. Like, He's the only one on this side. And He came and crossed the line to come with us, to hang out with us, Emmanuel, to be with us, to pitch His tents. And so if we're talking about and thinking about longevity in youth ministry, we're talking about, you're going to die if you don't know God. Because you're going to come to the end of yourself over and over again. You're going to take another course. You're going to read another book. You're going to go seek counseling. You're going to go do something. And it's like, we can do this. And we, a lot of times, means your youth team. And even if you say, we, as in you and God, can do this, that's baloney. God will do it. So you guys know what a conduit is? What's a conduit? What's that? Yeah, so right back there in the fire alarm or these things, they literally run electrical conduit and then they run the power through that, right? So the power, like, right? You know, generate the whole, light up the whole city, or it can kill you. So what do you got to do? You plug into the power, but what are we? Who's the power? Jesus! Yeah, okay? And then who are we? We're the conduits. So if the conduit is trashed off or wrecked up, yeah, it doesn't work. Okay, I'm getting way off. Okay, let's go. Point number one. You got to say it back to me. No God! Yeah, good. Point number two. Okay, this is where it gets fun. You need a philosophy of youth ministry. Ray, I bet you have one. Sure? All right. I'm going to suggest to you that why this is so important is that if you don't have one, you're gonna simply say, I went to this seminar and this dude, I went over here and read this book, I worked with this person and I heard this, or even the mixed up of what I just talked about, God told me this is how it works. And then you're like, you know, you're running all over and you're chasing your tail. Have you ever seen Acts? Do you ever have a dog who chases their tail? Anybody have one? Yeah, isn't that so cool how they do that? It's just like, what is wrong with them? That's the perfect picture of junior high, all right? Chasing your tail. It's like energy. Okay, so what do we have right here? Oh, I got to get up on stage. What do we have right here? This is a throne, right? Now, you guys, again, you've probably all seen this illustration. The four spiritual, a lot of people use this one. And they have the little throne in the middle of the picture. And then they say, okay, you know, so all this stuff is happening in your life, right? And the throne is there. And then they're like, you know, we got the sports. I can't draw. You guys know that. That's supposed to be a, that's not a sandwich. That's a football. Wait, sorry. Okay? And then this gets really complicated, right? Because it's like, hey, I'm the family guy. I got the wife and the kids and all this kind of stuff. Or then, you know, the really cool stuff. I really can't draw. That's an Audi A6. Quattro, 6-speed, V6 twin turbo, oh my, okay? You're driving, and then this guy pulls over, and you step on it, and literally disappears in the mirror, because just like, it doesn't matter what gear you're in. This thing goes, but I don't covet vehicles. It's okay, okay? And so, you know, you fill this up with all these other things. So the simple point is, it's like, who's on the throne of your life? I'm sure you've used this before, right? So it's like, hey, it's Jesus, right? But what's the trouble with what happens with most people? Yay! Other stuff gets on the throne. So all this good stuff. What's some good stuff you get on the throne? Oh, I know a good one.
Food.
I was just going to say that. Who said that? Yeah. So like In-N-Out Burger. Has anybody had that? That's like... No, they're only in California, aren't they? Yeah, it's borderline sacred. Okay, let's just do that. Okay, In-N-Out Burger. Yeah, amazing, okay? And you're like, Mark, don't be silly. Nobody worships food. Really? I can't believe... I won't talk about that. Okay. So what happens? Over and over again. This is going to come together. Honest. Trust me. Really. We jump... I don't know how many times I can do that. We jump up on the throne, and we sit on it, or we put this other stuff on the throne, and it's like, that's in charge of our life, right? So when we're... Just what I just talked about with youth ministry, we think somehow that we're going to do this, and we're going to figure it out. The philosophy of youth ministry that is based and stuck on this point gets really, really messed up, because what happens is we just think it's in this one little sphere. So I'm sure many of you have heard the books right over here, the four-chair disciple making. No? Yes? That one yes and the rest no? One maybe? Seriously? No, seriously. Whoa, this is cool. Okay. One, two, three, four chairs. Okay, somebody's been walking on these chairs. Okay, so chair number one. This is supposed to be a visual that Dr. Dan Spader worked on, and it's the whole principle is that this is like a linear picture of a disciple making process. So, what do you think this chair might be? Who would sit in this chair? The lost. You got to start somewhere. And so, in this chair, what's going on? Like, I don't know who's God, okay? What's going on? They don't know what's going on. So if you're going to make a disciple, right, you got to look for the lost, or there has to be this point where the lost get found. So it's a lot. Churches used to say this a lot of, a really good church is the found are seeking the lost, and the lost are getting found, right? You ever heard that one? So if the church isn't seeking the lost, what happens? Boom! Hop on the throne, and you can put your whole church on here. We need more programs. We need a bigger budget. We need a new steeple. We need to change our pews to theater chairs. We need to have more parking. Our parking lot has holes in it, right? Okay, so if the church isn't seeking the lost, we're in trouble. So what happens after you are lost? You got two options. That's right. You go to hell when you die, or you get found, okay? So in this chair, this is called the lost. This is called the person who is found, or you could even say the person who's a Christian, I guess. So when they sit in this chair, follow me, Jesus said. These are from his disciple making journey. Seek me and then follow me. So what's it look like to follow Jesus? What does he say? To obey him, yeah. So what's the good old song? Trust and... Okay. All right, so the trusting, we're kind of okay at, but the obeying, not so much. So what? How much of your youth ministry is in this chair? How much? Like, give me your programs. Seriously. Friday night, Sunday morning, Wednesday afternoon, or what do you do? Learn how to read the Bible, get the youth band going... We're going to go and we're going to make sure that we have accountability groups. I mean, really, really good stuff can happen in this chair. So what happens in this chair then if you don't move to this chair? You get stuck. And so this happens a lot, right? And you walk around with the chair and you're found and you think that's it. So what did Jesus do? He said, okay, seek me, come and see, follow me. And then this one is... Fish for people. You used to be able to say fisher man, but you can't say it anymore. Fisher people, okay? It's all good. So what did Jesus do? Disciples? Guys, come and see what's going on. Like, come and check this out. This is what it means to follow me. And then when they were following him, what did they do? They went on fishing trips. And if you haven't taken your students on a fishing trip, it's like, what are you doing? Because if you're teaching them to do this. So this morning, where we stayed, I have our junior high youth over at a conference in the east end of the city. And we started last night. And so I dropped them off there this morning. I came over here. So we stayed in this unique hotel last night. And in the hotel, because of a situation with a certain organization, there was a lot of special needs patients and their workers staying in the hotel. It was very, very interesting this morning to watch our students interact at the Continental breakfast thing. And it was like, okay, you know, we didn't plan this, but we're kind of on a fishing trip. And then some of these people wanted to interact in different ways. And then to watch our students huddle around, okay, let's all sit at our table. Anyway, I was so proud of our leaders. They were sitting with the other student, the other clients and so on and stuff like that. So come and see. Follow me, fisherman. What do you think this one is? Bear fruit. So this is actually the cycle, and these aren't words that I'm making up. These are passages, again, the fortune of discipleship, of looking at what it looks like to actually follow the model of Jesus. I had a very, very awesome opportunity, and I'm not plugging anything, but if and when or however you get a chance to go to Israel, the one trip that we took, we actually followed this path of Jesus. It was really screwed up because you had to drive out. Luckily, Israel's small. But you had to drive back and forth because you're actually doing what Jesus did and not just, okay, we're in Jerusalem today. Let's see everything in Jerusalem. It was like, okay, you know, where he was born, then calling the disciples, taking them on fishing trips, and then how that bore fruit and then expanded out. Okay, so why I'm laying this out for you is I want you to ask the question, if this isn't a picture of what you're doing, like what are you doing? Are you doing a whole bunch of stuff in this chair? Like this, using this model? Are you doing a whole bunch of stuff? We have some people that do a lot of like evangelism, right? We have a lot of people who are like, sorry to say it, but they don't care about the lost at all, right? That's few and no more. And then this whole cycle of it's actually a disciple-making ministry. So what do you think, sorry, I know that this isn't working perfectly, but what do you think this represents? It's the table and the four chairs. The church, okay. You guys are good. So these four chairs, right? We're so North American thinking. We think linearly. No, anyways, okay. We think in a line. And this is actually the picture, probably a healthy picture then, of you actually sitting around the table. Because you're inviting lost people to the table. You have followers who are working it out. You have those who are going out on fishing trips, right, and coming back in. And then you have those who are in this fruit-making and disciple-making process. So why have I spent so much time on that? So the challenge is, when I was speaking last time, I fell off our stage. It was so bad. Anyways, because the whole congregation goes, like this. And I was like, it's okay. I'm the youth pastor. I do that all the time. So the challenge is why this chair is so important. Because this is kind of like, you know, it's all clear. You write the notes. But this is a challenge. If we can't get off of this chair and off the throne, our ministries, our individual lives, then we can never be involved in the process and end up over there. So I did all of that time on point number two. Because if you don't have that to go back to, what happens? I can really preach on this one. This is a really big picture, right? If we don't have that to go back to, then what we'll do is we'll jump to the next thing. So just think about this. I do this again all the time with our youth. Why do we get together on the first day of the week and we gather and we say it's important to get together? You can tell me what the Bible says. because it tells us to do it. First of all, it's a command together. In our Christian history, it says that you changed, you know, because Christ rose. The Sunday is the first day of the week, and it puts things in perspective. But what happens as the week goes through, it's all the stuff that we have to do, we lose focus. What happens? Playing 5 videos this morning, 10 pop-ups. Oh, yeah, I think I need a new car, right? And then it's like, whoa, that's so sad. That was so tragic in Scarborough when the air conditioner fell on that child in the stroller, and the poor mom and dad lost their child. And then you're like, you can get into, you know, despair. You can get into off-center. So if you don't start your week, if you don't have those times when you're connecting with God, you jump on the throne and you think, I don't know. So if you don't have a philosophy of what Jesus did and to understand what he's doing, you're going to chase down a book. You're going to go to see somebody and say, how are you doing it there? You're going to steal somebody's program because you're constantly trying to figure it out instead of saying you're the conduit of saying, what did Jesus do? What did Jesus do? He loved people. He made disciples. He was here only for a very short time. Okay, so as we go through this, if those two aren't making sense, I want to follow. I want to follow up with that and see if we can put this together. So I want to personalize this. This is going to tell you how old I really am. So in 1989, just after we were married, my wife and I, a mentor, a godly guy, sent us to a Sun Life conference and teaching the four-chair discipleship, and it was like, I get it. I didn't tell you the other part. The other part was that we just got married, and the youth pastor at the time, a friend, kind of a bit of a mentor too, asked us to help out. Of course, that's what you do, right? Because I'd been involved in youth ministry as a kid and all that. Did anybody old enough besides Ray to remember when they had like a president of the youth group? I was the president of the youth group, okay? And they were really scared because I was brought up in a United Church, and this was a good Baptist church. So the pastor and the head elder like interviewed me one night after church to make sure that I was acceptable to be the president of youth. Sorry, it was really funny. But I passed the test. I'm still here. And so we're helping with youth, and then 3 to 5 weeks later, the youth pastor quit. And then we were like in charge of the youth group. And it was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And so, you know, what does God say? That kind of thing. We went to this conference, and it was put this whole thing into perspective. And the coolest part for me was that that was 1989. 1999, when I was actually in a paid position, I had a really awesome senior pastor, and he'd been trained by another dude who tried to help him, you know, again, some of these things to put wheels on what it means to be and have a plan in ministry. And that fostered me to kind of take more training in this and to move through that, and was like going back to, oh yeah, I remember I kind of had gotten off track. So if you don't have a philosophy, and then I was going to go through the whole thing. So 2009, getting involved in teaching some of it, in 2019, like it's like I'm still doing this, the same thing. It's having something to go back to, the philosophy. Okay, let's is anybody, no, there's definitely no Hicks here, is there? Rednecks? All right, yeah, all right, good. So I grew up on a dairy farm, and I went to 4-H. Does anybody know what that is? Yes, one. I pledged my head to clearer thinking. I have to remember this. My head to clearer thinking, my heart to greater loyalty, and my hands to greater service for my club, my community, and my country. What's that called? It's called a pledge. So what's the Christian pledge? Do good, be nice, clean up your plate, say thank you. I don't know, but I'm really not trying to be funny. Like this, if we don't understand what Jesus did, we're constantly going to make it something and call it something and make a denomination or write a book on it, and we're going to try to sell it or package it or something like that. But if we don't have that philosophy, we're going to be in trouble. So I want to move on to point number 3. I learned this from a really great mentor of mine, and Mark, if things aren't right at home, don't bother going out to do ministry. And it sounds really powerful, but he actually meant it. It's like literally, like you have nothing to give. So it goes back to the first point. Like if you don't understand, first of all, that you're the conduit. But if you're like playing this game and you're like, in my case, a snotty husband, or if you're, sorry, I'm not saying that I am. I'm just, okay whatever. Or if you're dealing with stuff, you know, with parents, or you've got stuff going on with a boyfriend or girlfriend or something like that, and like somehow that you think that God is still going to like truck through, like that's just not going to happen. So don't get confused on this if you're making notes. It's not that you have to be perfect. It's the point is you have to be real. So whenever I perform wedding ceremonies, I won't perform the ceremonies unless, of course, that they're both believers or they're both not believers. And then I won't do it unless they do the pre-marriage counseling with me, right? And I always want to have it way out because I honestly say at the beginning, I want this to be about you actually asking God if you're supposed to be together, not like you've jumped through the hoops and then I'll marry you, right? And so this couple on Thursday night, my wife and I got to go out with them. So I do a 6-month checkup after I perform the ceremony. And it was such a blessing. It was just like, this is why I did youth ministry. They were both my youth leaders from another church. And it was just really, really great, right? So we're driving home and my wife wanted to stop at the mall, and we did the one stop at it, but she wanted to stop somewhere else, and I thought it was probably closed. You know, I'm such a typical guy. Anyways, I messed up, so made her a little bit angry. And then, you know, we didn't talk on the way home. And I'm like, after 32 years, you think I could figure this out, right? Like, seriously. But it's like that little teeny wedge that the evil one put in the door, right? So then the next day, we have to do this big makeup thing and talk about it and all that kind of stuff. But guess what happens to my mind? Right? It's just like this. The big rocks that I were putting in were doubt and just like, oh man, you know, I can't even figure out how to be married to my wife after all these years and keep her happy. How can I be a good youth pastor? Stuff like that. If things aren't right in that area, I just want to challenge you and myself, like, not just figure it out, but ask the harder questions of what that looks like. Number four, and this one maybe is actually really hurtful or hard for some people, but you have to have real friends. So who's going to go for the record of the most Facebook friends? Anybody? Who has the biggest number of followers on Instagram, all right, or Twitter or whatever? I bet you have a lot. How many? No? No? Give me a number. How many followers some of you guys have? Two? No. Come on, he's thinking. How many followers? 300. 300. Yeah, good job, buddy. Anybody top that? No? So Jake, do you mind if I pick on you? Oh, I'm not supposed to use names. Hey, sir. So legit, out of those 300, how many do you know?
Probably like 200 of them. Like
really? Impressive. Okay, harder question. Out of those 200, how many would come to your funeral?
Ooh.
Oh, because you're not going to die. All right, okay.
Probably like 75 of them.
Wow, okay. So, well, how would you define a real friend? I want participation here.
Someone who has your back regardless.
Has your back regardless. I love that. Looks out for your best interest. Listens.
Someone calls you out when you're doing wrong.
Oh, nice. Keeps you accountable.
Accountable, yeah.
Yeah, we just...
I have a question, though. Are real friends permanent, or are they just there for... Can I just there close to help you out? Are they going to be there forever to be that way?
Wow. Can I ask how old you are? Is that okay?
Yeah. I have two ages, so... Like, in age, I have... In age, I'm 30.
Okay. When I went to seminary, again, you know, I was raised on the dairy farm. I was a hick guy. It killed me. Like, I knew everybody in my little community, and everybody knew me, and it was awesome, and I literally felt like I was a friend of everybody. And then when I had to make new friends, there was no room for that. So my mom's wisdom comes into play. You know what it is? Make new friends and keep the old. One is silver. And the other's goal. So the whole point is, what happened for me, I'm being very personal here, is that the friends who were my friends I'm talking to him today still, and connecting with him and going out, and you can pick up right where we left off. And I just moved to a bigger church, and it actually hurts my head to try to get to know. But what's my whole point here, right? Knowing people, what's a real friend? How many real friends do you think the average person can handle? How many did Jesus handle?
12. 11.
What's the answer, eh? Three. Right? Three, Peter, James, and John, 12, 72, 144, however you want to go through the math, and it's not somebody's idea, it's what the Bible tells us, is that as a person, you really can't handle more than three close friends that are real friends. 12 is a group that you can probably be real with. 72, you know, some people say between 72 and 100, that's for those two numbers, 144, whatever, is like you can lead and work with, that kind of thing. So if your youth group is really big, and if you think you have a relationship with all of them, you're kidding yourself, right? So I crossed the boundaries there. I'm talking about you. So if you want to have longevity in ministry, what does it look like to have actually real friends? I remember asking this question again so many times. Okay, be a lifelong learner. So I put some books on the table over there, and I also at the back, Marina is going to make sure that if you want, there is a whole stack of papers that look like this. And one of the dudes that works with me, he works for Indigo. And did you know that if you just scan the barcode that you can get this list? Isn't that cool? You guys probably already knew that. I didn't know it. And so that basically lists a lot of those. Why I'm not saying that it has to be books, but the point is, so many times, and I love picking on you, Ray, but so many times I'm sitting where Ray is at my age because I want to be a lifelong learner. And I know that you've seen this in youth, and forgive me if this is you, but if you think that you should be on the other side, like when somebody's speaking, that's a problem. Because we can always learn from somebody else. So I love, well, a lot of these books came from a course that I took called Crest. I really, really recommend that. It's supposed to be, it's not midlife crisis, but it's midlife leadership. And he does a really cool sigmoid. This is the sigmoid, isn't it? When, isn't that what you go like, right? It's that one, right? No science people here? Yeah, okay, right? Start off, everything's going great, oh my, I couldn't get any better, and then what's always going to happen? Thanks, right? And then you're like, okay, you figured it out, and away you go. So at this point, each time, if you're not figuring out of either what you got to change or what you got to do, then what happens is that most people then, they do this, okay? Some people, sorry, that shouldn't be there. Some people do this, but very, very few people are able, and then this is more the picture then, are able to keep, and it's not about economics up and to the right. It's actually about the point of understanding is that if you aren't a lifelong learner, you'll reach your capacity over and over and over again, and then you just redecorate, you know, you dress the pig up in other clothes, whatever the expression is, or put lipstick on the pig, that's the one, right? It's like, it's the same thing going on. So the one that, out of here, these took on a whole bunch of different sections, but this one scared me. Anybody read this one? So this dude, the Jesuits, anybody follow and understand what they're all about? So when a friend of mine who was in the course with me, we would get over and we'd talk about the books together. He's going like, I went and looked them up online. I wanted to be one, he said. And I was like, dude, you're a Baptist. You can't be a Jesuit. But it was like the title is so powerful. And what he showed was when you have this picture and this drive. Anyways, my whole point is, if you're not a lifelong learner and understanding your styles or your habits, the one that killed me was that you actually start to lose your energy. And that hasn't really happened yet to me, but my capacity to go all out. So who does all-nighters with their youth group? All right. Good job. Who said used to? I love that.
The wise people.
Yeah, okay. So I want to encourage you that if you haven't figured out that you probably need to sleep, if you're the leader, okay, you need to do that. So that's a free one. So what have you done? So just a couple quick things to be a lifelong learner. What are some things that you do to keep growing?
Reevaluate?
This? Do you come to this every year?
No, but I mean like...
Yeah, but this...
Going to workshops.
Yeah, cool. So can I ask a hard question? So when do you put that into practice, what you learn? Yeah, awesome. So that right follows the philosophy that if you're moving along, then you're multiplying yourself and you bring someone along. One of my favorite stories is when you go, Amazon screwed up everything, didn't it? Sorry, didn't say that. When you have to get something, right? Like food, stuff for the house, like you go do it. So why don't you take a student along with you? So all these normal things that you do, so an actual disciple is someone who walks in the dust of someone. So as what I'm trying to make the point of what you said is that you're learning by not just passing it on, but like doing it together with them. So if you're a lifelong learner, you're going to keep looking for those things and growing and having those different experiences. Okay, just two more to finish off here. Enjoy the creator, or the way I put it, or... basically, let Jesus recreate you. So what recreates you? So for me, it's really simple. I love to be outside. I love to do something active. And I love anything to do with my farming roots, to do with things growing or changing and stuff like that. So it kind of drives my wife nuts because I always want to change and plant things and be active all the time. She's almost got me talked into going to an all-inclusive resort, but I'm like, who wants to go and sit and lay around, right? Like, that's ridiculous. You know, you want to go do something. So what recreates you? Give me some answers that are real. Running? Yeah. Do you do like marathons?
Yeah.
All right, that's awesome. Running, what else? Music. Yeah, one of the interns I had, that was his space. When he just had to work things out with God, and it just literally, he became like, you know, like more like Christ, yeah. Somebody said the gym back here when we did that, that you had that in your thing. Does that recreate you, or is that just you want to be buff or something? No, that's great. Okay. Did you say singing dance praise in the kitchen with your kids? Is that what you said? Dance parties. Okay. I love that. Yeah, those moments. Eating curd at the cheese factory. Yeah, with my kids. Cool. Anybody else? What recreates you? Recreate, you know, that's recreation, right? Watching soccer.
Yeah.
Are you one of those guys and then throwing stuff at the TV?
No.
You're what?
Not a fanatic.
Oh, you're not a fanatic. Okay. Anything else?
Traveling.
Yeah. Now, I'm assuming that you mean if you're sitting in first class on a plane, right? No. The last trip. Oh, anyways, okay. I won't show you the picture. It was really interesting. It was like, everybody actually should fly somewhere just to realize that it's a really big world with lots of different people, right? Do you like to go exotic places or just not here? No, that sounds bad, but I mean...
I think I want to go to exotic places, actually. Exotic places.
Oh, really? Cool, because like I like Alaska or those, like that's not exotic, but I want to travel, yeah, different places, and yeah, okay, cool. Because has anybody like actually traveled to the prairies just for fun? Guys, they're beautiful. No?
See them all.
Yeah, just stand, go one spot and just look around and you're done. All right, okay. This last one is a super practical one, and then I'm going to tie it all together here, okay, and we'll leave a couple minutes for questions. This one is theologically, don't get this messed up, because I do me and you do you, that doesn't work. But what I'm coming from with this is, if you do you, when in youth ministry, what I'm talking about is, when you're 23, yeah, do the crazy things that the youth do, and whatever, grow your thing or whatever, okay? But when you're 32, you should be acting like a 32-year-old who loves students. When you're 42, you should be, okay, when you're 52, whatever, right? Like, that's what's real. And if you try to be a kid, you're dead. Like, it doesn't work. I'm not talking about just energy, but the harshest part is that sometimes, people stay involved in youth ministry because they don't know how to grow up. And I'm sorry that I said that out loud, but I think it's really true. Yeah, it is rough. What you said, somebody keeping me accountable, right? So for me, that was my big transition in Crest, was like, I love senior citizens. Like, so many opportunities with experience and stability of stuff. And it's like, God, are you sure you want me to do this again? And it was like, not because I was begrudging it. It was just because I thought, you know, it's easy in one sense. But in another sense, it was like, yes, at 50 years old, I want you to become the youth and young adult pastor. And it was like, it's awesome. And it's really, really great. But so here, show of hands, how many see themselves at 47 being a youth pastor still? Youth worker. All right. Okay. Harder question. How many people feel called, then I started this at the beginning, to youth ministry? I'm not trying to trick you guys. It's okay. So what I want to challenge us with is that, forgive me, if I've made any correlation that you have to get paid or have a pastoral role, please, that's not what I'm talking about at all. I'm talking about a calling, is that that's what you're supposed to do. So whether you have, like, you know, the job as the on-call nurse at the hospital in the emergency, or if you're flying airplanes, seriously, like, you're the best government worker. But if God calls you into youth ministry, you can do all that kind of stuff, right? And still be, like, the best youth minister and the best youth worker. So why I want to call out that whole thing in you of, if you want to have longevity, if God's asking you to do that, then yeah, these 7 points, they're great. But I want to challenge you, is that this is where we started. If God called you, then He's going to, you know, supply you with all of that. So let's try to wrap this up. I hope you took pictures of my nice drawings and put that with your notes. The whole point of knowing God, where we started, so many things in our world, this is happening, the stage of life that we're at right now, is the whole thing of real estate. And it's like, you know, buy land, they quit making it. You know, was house prices going to keep going up because in, you know, youth ministry, like, don't have any kind of pension plan and all that stuff. And we get putting God constantly in a box. But God is inexhaustible. And, you know, all the, even in the superhero movies, like, it's like, oh, you know, they stagger. Or, you know, or Tony's thing comes out or something like that. Or, you know, and all this stuff happens. But it's just like, or what happened? Didn't Thor get fat too? Like, yeah, I mean, it's like, it doesn't matter what, how big your hammer is or how bright your spark thing is. It's like, we're, right? We're on that other side. We're the created ones. And we get exhausted. But God is inexhaustible. So when we lose that connection, when we get messed up and we don't have this plan or this philosophy, which I'm trying to say to you is His, when we miss the point of some of the simple things that He says about trusting and obeying Him, then we're going to basically not have longevity, because it's going to be, well, you know, I'm doing this now. Or, you know, this is happening. So unless God is pulling you out, like, buddy, you don't got a ticket. You got to stay in. Because that's where God wants you. And if you ever figured out that the students are desperate, desperate for someone who just will listen to them. Like, I mean, I know that I'm very extroverted and I talk all the time, but I've never had a kid that won't talk to me. And it's just like, they just want you to be you. and to love them and care for them and to listen to them. Here's what I want you to do. In the back sheet of your paper, and I want this to be real, and I can't make you, of course, I want you to fill out that calendar now with as much sincerity as you can. What will it look like? What are the big rocks that you're going to be in? So now you're looking ahead, sir, and you're going to plan. And what the one guy who really helped me a lot with this, what are the big blocks? So you guys have done this. I'm sure you've done it in business. It's like, okay, it's a 15-hour project. I'm not going to sit and do it in 15 hours. Boom. Block number one. I've got this afternoon free. Block number two, right? Then the presentation. Do my master's thesis. Away we go. So what about if those big blocks, if those big rocks are then you moving ahead in ministry? So again, is there a big block where you're actually fishing for men, fishing for people, so you're seeking the lost? Is there a big block where you're actually growing, you know, and learning how to follow Christ? Is there a big block that you're actually planning what it looks like to have a full scope youth ministry? Okay, here's the problem. Just if anybody's freaking out right now. If you're like, Mark, I show up for 2 hours on Wednesday night and I love the kids and then I go home. You're really killing me here, man, okay? I want to challenge you. Show up for those 2 hours and then literally take another half an hour. It's not about quantity of time. It's about the quality of it. I know people have messed with that back and forth. But I want to challenge you is it doesn't take a lot. I ask my volunteers to sign a contract that says 10 to 15 hours that they're going to be serving in a month. And you're going like, that's one sleepover, right? But it's from the whole point of if you like meet every week, you know, a couple hours, so then you're up to about 8 hours. And then the hours start adding up. You go to a meeting. You do this. You said meetings. But then the reality is there will always be time left over. And I say, what are you doing with that time? And to me, that's where you have to then think about these big blocks. What are the things that you want to accomplish? So I'll be quiet. Take time. And I want you to actually fill that out. What are the big blocks? Is it developing a philosophy of ministry? Is it about ironing out the things that you know are trouble or sin in your family that you pretended haven't been there? Is it about actually growing? You know, what are those things that you need to be putting in? Get it? All right. As soon as we've done that, then I just have one more comment, then we'll do questions. Matt? Yeah, that's right on. Okay, good. So that's obviously something that you can work on. I just do want to close up and say, is there any questions that you have? Obviously, I can stick around and talk to you afterwards. But as we wrap up, was there anything that you wanted to share with the rest of us or the things you want to clarify? Yeah. What role does the daily devotional play in recreating? So I'll answer it personally, and then I'll, you know, look in a larger picture. For me, if there's not that time to do that, then to me it just cycles back through to I just go on my own strength. I actually can pull out of my bag, because I'm still a paper guy, so do not laugh too hard. So I literally have my monthly calendar, and then I use these in here. And if I don't literally block in that time to be spending with God and hearing from Him, then I just feel like this just gets filled up with others. Do you find that you use a whole bunch of different resources, how do you do that? Yeah. Or no, what do you actually use to do that?
Yeah, I use different resources, the Bible, but also some emotional materials.
Yeah. So one of the ones, I don't know if some of you guys are familiar with Purpose Driven, but I love and I keep using Doug Field's The Habit. and I just, you know, repackage it or so on. So out of the six habits, three of them are the Bible. So it's hang time with God. So that's just basically, what you call it, a devotional, something like that. The other one's accountability with another believer. So you live life together in faith, keep each other accountable, have each other's back. Bible memorization. So you actually go through different verses and you're taking scripture in. What am I at? H-A-B. I is involvement in ministry. And so if you're not like living out your faith, then you're going to, you know, become, you know, self-focused again. T is tithing your whole life, your resources, that kind of thing. And the last one, scripture study. So hang time with God, Bible memorization, and scripture study. And to me, if that's not happening, you know, again, personally for me, then there's no kind of recreation because... I should know that's a very strong word, but I can go out, and no offense, but I can run or I can do the fun stuff, but it's not actually from God speaking to me. So, I think it's really powerful. If anyone has really good resources, I mean, that's to me really important to share that kind of stuff of how you do that. So if that's not happening for us, it's really hard to teach students to do that, right? Another one that I've also taught was... with our students, we've done the genres, and so then I've asked them if you feel like, you know, reading through the Bible in a year or some of those practices, maybe actually read the different genres as a group, and that's really kind of interesting. You know, they're reading the Bible chronologically. That actually works really good. You read backwards too, right? Backwards chronologically. Okay. Any other questions? Yeah.
So, as you progress through the four chairs with your current group, how do you cater to the lost ones? And then how do you focus on your current group in the third chair and then maybe a new set of group in the first chair?
Yeah. So this is why this picture is so important and why it's important to do that. So it's always happening, right? So to answer your question is that, so this is happening on an individual basis. So knowing our students, and then it's happening, I think, sometimes on a group. It's always happening on a group basis. So one way that I do it personally is that there's always three levels of what we do in ministry. So the habits that I just mentioned, that's an individual way that we teach students to grow. Okay? And then as a group, we could, again, do fishing trips, or we go on mission, or we serve our areas, you know, full of opportunities like that. So that we're doing that. But individually, right, a student might be like, you know, who the blank cares about people like I, or the parents will tell me, I want a safe place for my kid, and so why are you bringing in, sorry Don, those people, okay, or whatever, you know, all these nice labels that we put on everybody. So to answer your question is, it's not easy. But we do it at an individual level, a smaller group level, so our ministry is divided up into small groups, and then the larger group level. So when I look at my calendar, like I showed you, and I print my calendar for the year, is that we will have, as a picture, it's a disciple making ministry. So I just had a training leaders meeting, and we went through what it means to be a disciple maker, talked about how it was in to be small groups with my leaders. We actually are going this afternoon in a few minutes out with our group to be working with some new refugees. And then again, it's a large group. There's a whole program of what we teach through and Sunday stuff like that. And then again, we are trying to encourage. But then individually, right, we're saying to every student, you're seeking the lost, you're developing spiritual habits, you're going and you have a mentor, you're going with somebody to try to seek the lost. And then, you know, are you on the process of becoming a disciple? What do you currently do with, do you like meet on Wednesday nights, or what is your group doing now?
So for us, we have one meeting every 2 weeks on Saturdays.
Okay.
And then I kind of sharpen the youth leaders to have their own little groups to go through that portrait.
Yeah. So the one that I would super encourage everyone then is, where's your time block? Where you're actually seeking God to ask Him what I mean, because I'm sorry, but if you don't get the point of this, all this is all based on like what Jesus did. It isn't somebody trying to put together a really cool plan. So He does a graphic overview, which I absolutely love. So come and see, follow me, fish for people, go and bear fruit. So the dead and the lost, the children, the young men, the fathers, the seeker, the believer, the worker, the disciple maker, win, build, equip, multiply, the basic needs, gospels, answers, Christian friends, identity. So if you're not thinking that plan through, then what's going to happen is what do I have to do? Remember we talked about this? What do I have to do to survive versus what do I do to thrive? So that happens on every level. If I would really highly recommend getting that book. Any other thoughts, questions, comments? All right. I feel very rude at just coming in and leaving, but I love my kids, so I'm going to go hang out with my junior high kids. We're going to go down to, I think, the Adam House today and have a great time with them. I put a couple cards up here if there's any other connections you want. If you want to browse some of those, the book list is at the back. And thanks for coming out. All right.